This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Kelly, and I'm incredibly proud to be an Over the Influence community member. When I became a member, I got a double dose of the podcast every week, now that I had access to the premium pod, and I also loved the in-person Zoom calls, basically just getting to know like-minded people. Personally, it's been just over a year since I changed my relationship with alcohol, and I've honestly never felt better. My head is clearer, my relationships with friends and family members are better, and overall in life I just have way more energy. Thankfully, I never had a rock bottom, but Over the Influence made me realise I didn't need one. It's never too late to change for the better. So thanks for being there for me, OTI, and keep up the great work.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It is fantastic to have you listening. If you've just completed a dry month, you've done dry January, and you're thinking, you know what, that was all right. Just keep going. Maybe just try a dry February as well. Tip it over into March, and before you know it, you might be like 100 days alcohol-free. And that, my friends, is when we say the tipping point occurs. Anyway, welcome to Over the Influence. It's really good to have you listening today. A reintroduction as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley. Everybody calls me Shaz. I'm based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. About 5.5 years alcohol free now, and it's ace. And every time I say it out loud, it will never not surprise me. It's the best thing I ever did. To cut a very, very long story short, I took a break from booze in September 2018. I thought it'd be rubbish. I thought it'd be boring. I thought my life would stop. Actually, the polar opposite happened. I stopped boozing and I started living. And here we are, 5 and a bit years now, further down the line. And honestly, hands down, the best thing I have ever done. You might be shouting now, going, how much did you drink then? How bad did it get? I drank too much, too quickly, too often. And I'll never go back. As simple as that. We've got a really, really good guest joining us on the podcast very, very shortly. That was a really long-winded intro, Ben. Do you want to keep yours brief, or are you going to be as long-winded as I was? Seriously.
No, I'll keep it brief. Hello, I'm Ben. I'm 35. I live in Liverpool. Husband to Jem. Stepdad to Alfie and Millie. Dad to this one. Yes, Leo is on my lap for this recording today. Childcare, we don't have to go into it, but I've got a son. He's 15 months old and he's a bit grumpy. Pretty sure he's just done a poo as well. So.
Oh, what a great start to a podcast.
Ben. Yeah, yeah. But you know what? This is about alcohol-free life. Genuinely, I don't know if Leo would be here if I'd not removed booze 3.5 years ago. Like, in all seriousness, It changed my life completely, removing alcohol. I didn't mean to. I was only going to give up for a few months just to kind of give myself a break. But I got to 3 months and thought, oh, this is starting to feel all right. I'm going to go to 6 months. And I got to 6 months and went, wow, if I've done 6 months, how cool would it be to say I did a whole year alcohol free? And I got to day 366 and thought, this is good for me. This is good. I'm going to carry on. And yeah, I'll be 4 years out. Okay. I know. 4 years. Okay. Just I'm doing a podcast. 4 years alcohol free in July. I also, I'm not currently technically here, am I, Shaz? Because when this podcast comes out, I'll be on my honeymoon.
Oh, excuse you being on your honeymoon.
I'm on my honeymoon. I'll be on an alcohol-free honeymoon.
Alcohol-free, fabulous.
And in the sunshine, Leo won't be there. But I thought recording this today, and like one of the reasons we're having Leo is here is because we're trying to get a few in the bag before I do go away for a couple of weeks. Our normal recording schedule will be interrupted. But I know that our guest today won't mind that Leo is sitting on my lap because we've known our guest for a very long time.
We're
old friends with our guest today.
Yes, we are. Yeah, we are.
Oh, he's so cute.
Isn't it? Oh, honestly, it's so good. And you know what? Oh, Helen, before we start chatting, just what Ben said there, you know, lovely Leo. He is sitting there on his knee. He might have just filled his nappy. We don't care. We don't care about that. The fact that Ben just said then that Leo might not be here had he continued drinking. It's just massive, isn't it? So, so
amazing.
So lovely. We've said this time and time again, and this podcast is all about your stories. Yes, we speak to the alcohol-free authors. Yes, we speak to the social influencers. Yes, we speak to the TV stars and the pop stars, and it's all fan-flipping-tastic. We speak to ordinary people doing extraordinary things, but you know what? There's no more special than when an OTI community member says, all right, then I'll come on the podcast and have a chat. It gives us a great pleasure on this episode to introduce the one and only Dr. Helen, live from the Middle East to Over the Influence. Sounds like a radio show. Dr. Helen, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. I know, I can't believe like the lineup you've had this month and I'm on the podcast. Very exciting.
How does that feel then as a starting point to be on the podcast talking, well, we're going to be talking all about alcohol-free life and what life's been like for you over quite a few years now. How does that feel?
It's amazing, really. It's like walking into the TV or something. even the other week, you had the podcast with William Porter on, and I did the little voice introduction at the start when I was talking about being a member of Over the Influence, and even that was cool. And it's like, now I'm actually the guest on the podcast. It's amazing.
It's brilliant. It's so, so good. And genuinely, myself and Bennett, we're chuffed to bits that you've come on to share your story and talk about your journey. As I've already mentioned, Helen, and we call you Dr. Helen because that's your actual title, because you are a medical professional, very clever lady working very hard in the Middle East. You've been doing this whole alcohol-free thing for a long, long time. And, you know, I think the first question I want to ask you before we get into everything else is why, when you were so far in to your own personal alcohol-free journey, did you go, you know what, I think I'm going to join a community? Because a lot of people start week one, month one, a couple of months in. But for you, it was many, many years, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I think my first introduction to Over the Influence was when your mum said to me, who I worked with in the hospital, said, my daughter's doing a podcast and I thought you might like to listen to it. And it was, yeah, I was just trying to work out how long I had been not drinking for when OTI started. And I think I did listen to your podcast almost from the first ones. And yeah, it had been about 5 years. But, you know, 10 years ago, it was like a different planet, really, in the alcohol-free world. There weren't many podcasts. There weren't even really things called podcasts, really, at that time. There's a few blogs and a few kind of like websites that you could make comments on, but you know, even when you started the podcast, there's no community. But yeah, I just thought I'd listen to the podcast because your mum told me to.
That's really funny. All right, Celia, can you believe we've got Helen on the pod? It's amazing.
and it was brilliant, and it was like, it was just like a ray of sunshine, really, because, like, I mean, when I talk to you a little bit more about my story, you know, I think I had a lot of years where I just stopped drinking myself. I didn't talk to anyone about it. I was embarrassed about the fact that I felt like I couldn't control alcohol. I kind of felt a bit like I was the only one, you know, and I hadn't talked to many people about it. And then suddenly there was these people talking about it like it was a positive thing, like it was a good thing, like people were having fun. And I was like, oh my God, this is brilliant. And it was just such a different way to talk about it that I loved the podcast, absolutely devoured it. And as soon as you announced that you started the community, I thought, I want to be a part of this. And I loved the idea that I could be in this community anonymously and, you know, it could be all like just talking to people about it. But actually the opposite thing happened to my amazement. It made me kind of get really confident about talking about being alcohol-free, really happy about it. And then, like, here we are, I'm on the podcast.
So. It's brilliant. It's so, so good. And oh, that's what we love. That's what we love about this community and about shouting about alcohol-free life. What you said there sums it up in a nutshell, and we will get into what you were like as a drinker and, you know, and why you changed your relationship with alcohol. When you first came into Over the Influence, like you said, you were just probably quite relieved to be able to speak anonymously about alcohol without any judgment about what it might have been. And then you've just said it gave you the confidence to actually be loud and proud about it. And that must have been quite a breath of fresh air. If previously, Helen, you'd spent many years doing it on your own and not actually discussing it with anybody.
Yeah, I mean, it really, you know, it did. It changed my life, really, because, you know, I thought it would be somewhere that I could just have conversations with people about how crap it was not drinking, maybe. And actually, it was the opposite. And, you know, I've made, like, really, really good friends from being in the community. But it's made me different in real life as well. And, yeah, that's the thing that surprised me about it, really.
So this year, in 2024, you will be one whole decade sober.
Wow.
10 years.
That is so cool.
Free. Isn't that?
Yeah,
that's just brilliant. I think it's just amazing. Let's rewind to Helen in 2014. What were you like as a drinker? Just talk us through that period that led you to making the decision to stop.
I mean, I had been sort of building up to that moment for a long time, really. I'd always been, you know, probably been a bit shy, and I think, you know, I've always had a big imposter syndrome. So, you know, like coming on the podcast, why do you want to listen to my story? You know, I spent a lot of years worried about what people thought about me. And I think when I discovered alcohol, it was a kind of a release from all of that. You know, at first it was like, you know, I can be this different person. I can be out, I can be social, I can be kind of I felt like it gave me confidence. And maybe at first it did. But, you know, also there's a big world of alcohol associated with a lot of people's jobs, and, you know, it can be pretty stressful at times in the medical world. You know, I work in a specialty where you know, it is intensive care, people are having heart surgery, people are very ill and die, and you know, what you do is important. You've got to be like on the ball, and it's long hours, and you know, I increasingly, I think, used alcohol to kind of numb the stress, and you know, I think a lot of people do in that field. You know, alcohol was like, from the moment I started the medical school, you know, the first day there was this kind of like induction into the medical society where you had to kind of crawl through this tunnel and be drinking shots. And, you know, it's, I mean, they have changed the way they do these things now, but, you know, at the time it was the 90s, it was university in the 90s, I was trying to be one of the boys, and that continued as well through my career. I've been in jobs where there's a lot of, they're kind of like male dominated jobs, and I think I've always wanted to be like, you know, one of the lads, wanted to keep up with the boys with the drinking. So I think, you know, as the years went on, I went to conferences, they were very drunken nights. I mean, we used to have people that you know, the drug reps, as they call them, the people who come and give you education about which medications are available, would take you out for dinner and play with alcohol to get you to use their medications. And, you know, that's stopped now. They're not allowed to do that now. But at the time, you know, that was a very sort of common thing. So I think, you know, I was drinking more and more. I was kind of using it to kind of relieve stress and to socialize and to get rid of my shyness, make me more confident. But at the same time, I think, you know, as a lot of people find, they're sort of just like drinking more and more, and it got to the stage, you know, like you said in the introduction, where you felt like your life was going to be nothing without alcohol. I felt like it was a part of my life. Like I had to drink. I didn't want to go, you know, I was thinking today that if there was a night out and I had to drive, or if I had to be on call, I think, what's the point in going? If I can't drink, there's no point in going. I mean, how crazy is that? You don't want to go to socialize with people because you can't drink. I mean, it's just ridiculous when I look back on it. But I literally would have not gone to things if I couldn't drink. And, you know, I love the cinema, which you could take your bottle of wine into. You know, everything had to start revolving around alcohol. So that was kind of like ongoing. But then I think the thing which really ramped up, which was happening around 2014, was that a guy that I worked with, who was like a mentor, a friend, absolutely amazing, really, 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 really good doctor called Carl. And he was like 49, and he got diagnosed with prostate cancer. And it had spread everywhere. And he was fit. He was running the marathon. He was like the fittest guy we knew. And I worked very closely with him. I'd actually probably moved to Blackpool to work there as a consultant because of him, really. And he suddenly had cancer. And at the same time, my mum, who just like retired from work, who was always fit, who was like your mum in the medical profession, suddenly couldn't speak. And she had this brain tumour. And it just came from nowhere. And within like 6 months, my mum was dead. And it was just horrendous. And so she got sick and he was sick. And it was just like, I was really... It's funny because if you look at me from the outside, I was doing really well. Like, even my husband was saying before, because I said I was a mess, but I was doing really well in work. I was throwing myself into work. I was getting awards for Doctor of the Year. I was like getting asked to be managers of things. I was like running the department. But at the same time, I would go home and I would just be drinking to like numb the pain. And I was waking up in the middle of the night. I wasn't sleeping properly. I was waking up with my heart racing. And I was thinking, my heart's going to go into this irregular rhythm. And I'm going to have to go to hospital, and it's because of the alcohol. I'm going to have to like confess to them because of the alcohol. And I felt like I was living a double life. You know, I was looking after patients that were the sick on intensive care, and I'm telling them and the families that they should be drinking less. And I'm drinking. I know that I'm drinking too much. And, you know, I was in denial, and I was just blocking out pain with alcohol. But also I didn't want to stop because I just couldn't imagine life without alcohol. And I was kind of waiting for something to stop me. I was waiting for someone to tell me that I was drinking too much, or I was waiting for me to have a medical problem from it, or I was waiting for something to happen that forced me to stop drinking, because I in my head it was like, if I stop drinking, my life's over. So something's, and I knew, and like you know, you said before, I'd started thinking like 10 years before, at some point I'm going to have to stop drinking. I'd noticed that I always had to have like some alcohol in the house. Like there had to be some there, you know, otherwise I felt a bit like not right. And you know, if I finished the wine, yeah. So, you know, yeah. Even that was like 10 years before, and I was thinking, one day I'm gonna have to stop drinking, one day. But I was just thinking, it's gonna be like the end of my life basically when it happens. So I mean, it's just awful, isn't it? And I wish and that's why I love being part of Over the Influence now, that I can like tell people. I just want to tell everyone that it's not the end of your life. It's absolutely brilliant life without alcohol. It's so much better. It's different, but it's, you are more you, and it's like amazing without alcohol. And I wish that I'd known that. I wish that I'd been able to see something like this at that time. But yeah, like you know, 10 years ago basically my mum had died, just like almost to the day, really, 10 years ago. It was the start of February, and Carl was getting more and more sick, and we knew that he was going to die. And I went to a retirement party for him, and I was just an absolute bits. And you know, because I'm a doctor, I couldn't do anything to help them as well. And it was even worse. And it was like, I couldn't save my mum. And so it was horrible. It was a horrible time. It was really difficult. And we had this retirement party, and I ended up absolutely hammered, blackout drunk. I'd vomited in another consultant's car on the way home. And the next day, my husband said to me, something's got to change. And I was like, okay. And I thought, I've lost my mum. I'm losing Carl and I'm going to lose my husband as well. And that's how I, that's, it was that, you know, it was that bad. And so I thought, I'll have a break from alcohol. I'll have a break. I'll have a few months. I'll reset and I'll have a break. And so I stopped drinking. I absolutely white knuckle, cold turkey did it, you know, kind of like, I didn't want to go to AA because I was still having this conversation in my head. Am I an alcoholic or not? Am I, you know, do I have to stop drinking or not? And now I just think that's just such a ridiculous conversation. It's like, if alcohol was obviously not doing any good, it doesn't matter what the definition of it was. It was not nice drinking. So I stopped, I started reading like some blogs and some books, and I started writing down things which I noticed, which is amazing. And I go back to that even now, and like the things which were good that happened and the things that were bad that I didn't want to happen again. And like, I noticed physical things straight away. Like I slept amazingly straight away. And then after about 3 months, I thought, okay, now I can, now I've got control of it. Now I've reset and now I can moderate. And I literally like went out at the weekend, went to a medical ball, got drunk on Monday, got a bottle of wine after work, drank the whole bottle of wine. And then I was like, no, I can't moderate. I have to stop altogether. I can't just have one or two. And then that was it. That was the last time. So that was, I stopped and started and then stopped again. And then that was 10 years ago.
10 years ago. Yeah. Which is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dr. Helen, tell me if I'm wrong here, but you've provided me personally with one of my proudest OTI moments ever. And it's when you wrote that article. Sorry about the baby, by the way. It's when you wrote the article for your medical magazine. What was it called again? The something journal.
Like
wasn't
the,
it?
Yeah, it's the bulletin of the Royal College of Anaesthetists.
So very
That's
swanky.
Amazing. That's so amazing.
But that was one of my proudest OTI moments because it. And this is the bit where I want you to tell me if I'm wrong. It feels like, you know, you didn't need us to stop drinking, but OTI helped you to start enjoying sobriety.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was looking back at my little drinking notes as well of what happened when today. And like, it took me the first 2 years, I didn't really go out hardly at all. I didn't talk to people about it at all. I didn't tell people that I'd stopped drinking, you know, to the extent that my mother-in-law thought that I was pregnant and, you know, all this sort of stuff. It was like no one really knew what was going on, and I kind of just avoided the conversation. But after 2 years, I went on a hen do with my sort of party girl, you know, previous sort of drinking, big, heavy drinking friends that when I lived in London as a junior doctor, I used to go out clubbing with. And that was after 2 years. I felt like I was confident to do that. And I was really worried about it. And I was thinking it was going to be, you know, really difficult all weekend. And it was actually amazing. We had a really good weekend and I had fantastic conversations with them all. And I told them that I'd stopped drinking and talked to them a little bit about it. But that was after 2 years. And then still, like, I didn't really, you know, I just avoided the conversation with people still. I didn't really want to talk to people about it. And I think I just felt I just felt embarrassed. I just felt like, why can't I control alcohol? Why don't I have an off switch? You know, why am I like this? And I just felt embarrassed about it. And all, you know, the things that I'd done when I was drunk and stuff. And I just felt like it was like a, you know, something to be embarrassed about and something, I think I still felt like I was missing out to some extent. And then, I don't know, just, yeah, Over the Influence just made me, just being part of the community made me see all the positive things suddenly and realize that, you know, especially some of the podcasts that I always remember, this podcast with the sober exec where he was talking about shame and I hadn't even realized I was ashamed of it. I hadn't realized, but when I listened to the podcast with him, I was like, oh my God, I have been ashamed of it. And then I was like, and why?
That's the thing I really want to ask you about, because you went from when you first joined us, even you were 5 years into it or maybe even a bit longer, and you never would have written an article for, you know, your industry magazine where every single person in your profession reads that. Like, you just wouldn't have had that confidence to do it.
No.
The question I've got is, it's not about how great OCR is, but of course, just please feel free to just keep dropping that in as we continue our conversation. But it's, do you think it's because you're a doctor, do you think that added to your sense of shame? If you'd been an estate agent or, you know, working in a restaurant or whatever, do you think that the fact that you were a medical practitioner, and you briefly mentioned it earlier, you know, you're talking to people about this stuff every day. Do you think your profession added to the sense of shame that you felt?
It definitely made me feel really hypocritical because, you know, and I felt so much more. I mean, as soon as I stopped drinking, I felt like I could be a more authentic person, be honest. You know, I wouldn't tell people what I'd done at the weekend because I'd think I can't, you know, go into work and say I was dancing on the table last weekend, something. And I think, yeah, like, you know, in my head, I was like, well, you know, all the bad things from alcohol, I've treated patients who've had liver failure and, you know, died from alcohol. And I've seen people vomit up blood and die in a really, really horrible way because of alcohol. And I'm drinking loads, you know, it's like, it feels bad. It's not a good way to live, I think. And yeah, so part of that was that sort of hypocritical feeling. But also I think the shame is that shame of like, oh, you know, other people can control it. And I think, you know, when you start talking to more and more people, you think actually, and you know, listening to a lot of the podcasts and things and reading the books, it's like, well, no, this is an addictive substance which is made to be addictive. And why should you be able to drink responsibly or whatever? You know, why should you be able to control it?
It's like a hideous double whammy of shame, because during the drinking and the blackouts and the, you know, the lack of off switch and all that, and I understand everything you're saying, Helen, been there, done that, and vomited down the t-shirt. So you've got the shame of that, and then you've got the shame of sobriety, you know, and that's what he talked about, that episode you've referred back to with the sober executive. It took him years and years and years to actually say, I don't drink anymore. Yet it's something in a world that is absolutely saturated in alcohol that you should be so incredibly proud of.
Exactly.
Not feeling shameful for. And to hear now, you know, that I think you were further on than 5 years. I think you might have been about maybe seven, eight years sober when you joined Over the Influence. To flip that and actually connect with people where sobriety is celebrated, where nobody will judge anything you've ever done, you know, within the community, because people just get it. And that shame is it's removed, and you can become your authentic self. You can start writing flipping amazing articles for your industry publications, which is phenomenal. When you were able to do that, when that veil of shame was lifted, how did that make you feel?
Yeah, it was amazing. And it's gradually happened really over the last couple of years. And yeah, when I wrote the article, even that, I was a little bit nervous about it coming out, and I was thinking, shall I put my picture on it and shall I put my name on it? And I sort of made the decision to do it. And I thought,
like joining OTI all over
again. Yeah.
You get a little notification from us that says, you know, we don't have to, but we'd encourage you to use a real picture because we celebrate being alcohol free here, and use your real name and connect with people on deep level. It's the same thing all over again. Oh God, I've got to put my bloody photo in it.
Yeah. But like then people actually contacted me afterwards and said, you know,
amazing.
I'm a doctor. I've found, you know, I had struggles with alcohol, and I'm really pleased that you're like bringing this conversation up, and, you know, it's something we need to talk about more. So yeah, it was amazing. It was so good. And I even thought, which was like the sort of nightmare, was, you know, I went to a conference last year and I bumped into a doctor that I'd not seen for ages, and he said to me, I saw your article, and I was like, oh my God. And it was fine, and it was really nice, and he was like, yeah, that was brilliant, that was really good. And you know, it kind of like was right in my face that actually people had read it and seen it. But yeah, I was really proud of it. I was proud that I could like make it some, you know, because I want people to be able to talk about it. And I think, you know, it's really important to get people to understand that you don't have, like, you, like, I don't know, quoting over, because you don't have to have a rock bottom. You know, some people do, some people don't. You don't have to. I spent a lot of time trying to decide whether I was an alcoholic, and, you know, I spent a lot of time trying to decide what, how much was too much. And, you know, I think it's good to get the conversation out in the mainstream that, you know, not, you know, one or two drinks can be too much. It's having an effect on you, and, you know, people need to start talking about it.
We're just going to take a very quick break from this brilliant chat with one of our community members, Dr. Helen. And oh, what I love about Dr. Helen, aside from all of it, because so much of her story rings true with me as well, I think we were quite similar in our drinking, is the fact that Dr. Helen chose to join Over the Influence, Ben, when she was, what, 6-7 years alcohol-free?
We need to do a full disclosure here, because we're not quite sure if Dr. Helen's already talked about this or if she's about to talk about this after these middle bits, because we record the podcast 6 till 7.
Yeah,
and look,
T's so
already
confused.
Bang on 7. So we record these middle bits after we've done the episode. So, yes, she was many years
alcohol free. Yeah.
And obviously for her, being able to actively talk about it with other people has helped her remove the shame around it that she felt before. Anyway, she might have talked about that, she might not have done. The other thing she may or may not have talked about yet is when she hit 9 years. She was 9 years last year.
Yeah.
And we want to talk about OTI chat, don't we? And the importance of that kind of one-to-one connection that you can get through joining the OTI community by going to overtheinfluence.co.uk and clicking the join us button. $24.99 a month or £249 a year. It's a bargain.
You should do that in that really, really sped up bit like they do on motor adverts on commercial radio.
Yeah, yeah. There's a cut mark at the rear. I swear that no one can talk that quickly, and they've had to speed all those people up.
They're all sped up. They've got to be.
But Dr. Helen has said, or she's about to talk about, how even at 9 years into this, 9 years alcohol free, she had a bit of a wobble, and how important it was for her to be able to reach out to somebody.
It's massive.
We've got a function of Over the Influence, the community, called OTI chat, where it's basically like WhatsApp Messenger, but within OTI. If you can join the community, join the Zoom calls, join the events if you can, you start building these one-to-one connections with people. And we know that there's members who talk to each other every single day, like without fail, you know. But even 9 years in, I think it's just a reminder that this isn't a tick box exercise, you know, and there are moments that come along that catch you out. Having people to be able to reach out to and go, right, can I talk to you about this? Because this has happened and this is how I'm feeling, can be really, really important. And of course, by joining Over the Influence, you get access straight away to OTI chat, and our members are amazing. If you message someone, they'll get back to you.
Yeah. And it's also, it's key that you're messaging somebody that gets it.
Simple as that.
They just get it. You might just be having a wobble over going out on a Saturday night with a group of mates to a bar. It might be something quite simple like that. It might be something much bigger. You know, you've got a really big life-changing event going on, some sort of mega trigger. If you can talk to people, if you can vocalise your fears and your worries, and equally on that note, you know, you can celebrate your wins as well. It can be really hard, I think, to share with your drinking buddies. Oh, guess what? I didn't drink last night. I'm now a week alcohol-free. Like, yeah, and what? Do it in this community. Everyone's like, woohoo, it's amazing. So we do, obviously, you know, share when it gets difficult, but it's really important to celebrate the wins, no matter how big or small as well. So you can do it on OTI chat, which is amazing. You can do it on the forums, you know, a bit like Facebook, really. You just share your posts and interact with people that way. But for so many people, it's actually jumping on a Zoom call and having that face-to-face connection with people. And then after that, of course, when people have made mates and you go, what? You live down the road from me. OMG. Let's go and do a cake crawl. It all kicks off in a really, really good way.
We need to make the bakery crawl. We need to make that happen.
I want that to happen. It's so good.
Look, all of this you can get by joining Over the Influence. Overtheinfluence.co.uk. Hit the join us button. and you get straight in. You know, sorry, that voice
it's just great.
Shall we get back to the doctor, our mate, Dr. Helen? I think it's really important that you are sharing your message, Dr. Helen, because, you know, this episode is going to be uploaded as Dr. Helen. People will be scrolling through the podcast channel and they will see Dr. Helen. And the reason I say that is because, you know, you could be treating someone for, you know, something alcohol related and go home and crack open a bottle of wine because you're a human being. You know, there could be a policeman on shift in the centre of town and he could be arresting someone because they're drunk and disorderly and smashing up whatever, and still finish their shift and go and get pissed themselves because they're human beings. You know, it's, you look at our community and you're Dr. Helen, but we've got lawyers, we've got mental health nurses, we've got business owners. There's all sorts of people in our community. And I think there is that, it's again, how often we talked about the social stereotype of the park bench person. Yeah. You know, if you've got a problem with alcohol, you end up on a park bench looking like crap with a bottle and a brown bag in your hand, you know. But actually, it's that's not the case, is it? That this affects everybody. And there are stats out there that show that people with more disposable income have more disposable income to spend on alcohol and therefore buy more. It's not about buying different brands. The stats are out there on Alcohol Change UK. The people who have got higher incomes, of course, they've got more to spend. So therefore, they can spend it on alcohol. Like, it's not... I don't know. Where am I going with this?
Yeah. And it's so, I mean, you know, the, it's almost like you know, it's so part of the landscape in the health system. And it's like, you know, everyone's doing this.
It's so normalized in every industry, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and I remember talking to, and I won't name our mental health nurse, but talking to her and she felt exactly the same way. About not being able, she's a mental health nurse, like every day encouraging people to talk. But she felt like she couldn't talk to her colleagues because how would they judge her? You know? And isn't that just such a shame? That's the shame. Forget about shame of drinking. It's such a shame that people are made to feel that way.
When I started off in the hospital, I mean, all of the hospitals had bars in them. And, you know, there was a pub in the hospital, inside the hospital.
Whoa. What?
And when I was a junior doctor in Liverpool, I mean, they literally used to go, there was waitress service for the consultants and the rest of them had to go to the bar.
Wow.
Oh,
you know what?
God.
It blew my mind last week, Shaz, when Professor David Nutt was talking about the MPs. And I knew that there was an MP bar in Parliament because he told us about it last time he was on. I didn't realise that you could go and have a drink and then go and vote.
Yeah.
I just had never crossed my mind before that that's a possibility.
One thing having a bar at Westminster, it's quite another having it in a hospital.
Well, yeah. With waitress service.
When I started, there was the smoking coffee room and there was the normal coffee room as well.
Oh, I'm gobsmacked.
Yeah.
Wow. And people wonder why 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years down the line, there are issues in society.
But that's how powerful these substances are. Because Dr. Helen, you know, you would have spent as part of your training, you know, it's not just about, you know, seeing the people and treating people who are there for alcohol-related illnesses or, you know, you would have learned, like, the theory before you even saw it in person. You would have spent years learning the theory behind this. But it just shows you how powerful these substances are, that even when you medically know what it can do to you, whether it's smoking or whether it's alcohol, that it's still done.
Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, you know, it was just common practice. I mean, people would be working. I mean, we worked, you know, we worked like 72 hours and stuff like that. We worked these ridiculous long calls and shifts. And, you know, everyone just went straight to the pub as soon as they finished. You know, 8 o'clock in the morning, you finish your 48 hours and everyone just went to the pub. I mean, we used to do it, you know, all the time. And I mean, I probably, by the time I started, it was the days of actually drinking in work had gone, but, you know, they used to, but certainly afterwards, you know, people would with me in the hospital bar, which was cheaper. It was subsidised as well, the MP's bar. Crazy. Yeah,
absolutely crazy. Helen, I can't imagine like how many positive changes you've sort of experienced over the last 10 years, but it sort of saddens me a bit as well that you really struggled sort of on your own, not so much struggled with the stopping drinking. I mean, that I know that was hard anyway, but struggled with the solo aspect of it, of not being able to share any. It sounds like the first half of that decade, you were flying solo. And then the second half, it's changed. Tell us a bit more about that and what that's been like for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first few years after I stopped drinking, I had a lot of physical changes. So I definitely felt a lot of benefit. Like I had better, you know, my heart rate went down, my skin was better, my, you know, sleep was amazing. All those sort of things were a lot better. And I really noticed it took me a long time to get off the sugar. But in the last few years,
I'm still on
happened.
The sugar. I'm still on the sugar and I'm 5 years in.
but now I'm like 20 kilos less than I was 10 years ago. Yeah. So that I finally did get,
I mean,
super
the paddleboarding in the most gorgeous scenery that is literally like outside your flat where you live in the middle. That's got to be helping the waistline as well, Dr. Helen.
Yeah, when you can like go to the beach every weekend, it kind of motivates you to try and get in the bikini.
Helen's one of these people that can do like headstands and paddle boards and all the rest of it. I've seen your pictures on social media, Helen. You look incredible.
But I love it now. I love it. But I feel like, you know, it did take me a good few years to, and it's not that I actually, when I've talked to my friends about it, I mean, they do, you know, it is okay. And I am not someone who lost a lot of friends. As I say, the party girlfriends actually told me that, you know, I was as much a friend without alcohol, much to my amazement, because I listened to what they were saying and, you know, I could have better conversations with all of them. And it was just, it was me. It was me that had a problem with it, really. And, you know, I think there's this big thing as well where I felt like I was numbing things with alcohol and I started to like grow up, started to deal with emotions. And that took a long time to happen, really. And it only happened when I stopped drinking. So it's been really good.
Last month we had Craig Beck, author of Alcohol Lied to Me and Alcohol Lied to Me Again, on the podcast. Craig has been on a couple of times, and every single time he comes on, the reaction is always fantastic. The feedback is brilliant. And what you just said there, Helen, something he said during the course of that episode, and it just so resonated with me. And still, you know, 5 years down the line, you're still listening and you're still learning. And he says, you will come to a point where you're like, just grow up.
Yeah, no, and that I listened to that this week and it really, really resonated with me.
Well.
Really resonated with me, because I thought that is exactly what happened. And also, he said something about, you know, your life, it will change, but you know, that's okay as well. When he was talking about the you know, you don't want to go and play in a ballpark anymore, and it's true. It's like I was thinking my life's over. My life is going to be awful without alcohol. I'm never going to enjoy a birthday again. I'm never going to enjoy Christmas again. And it's different, but it's better. Yeah.
Actually, I would say that life, it's not over. It's almost like getting a second chance. For me now, it feels like life almost started again in some ways. And it is so much better. Helen, there'll be people listening to this that are exactly where you were 10 years ago, 11 years ago, 12 years ago, feeling like they're on their own, feeling full of shame, feeling embarrassed. Having been there, what would you say to somebody listening, feeling those feelings now?
I mean, I really want everyone to know that it's not their fault. It's not their fault they can't control alcohol or they don't have an off switch. It is a substance which is poisonous, which is made that way, and it's a normal response to something that's been promoted and you know, sold to us. But also, I really, really want everyone to know that it, your life doesn't end when you stop drinking, and it's, you know, it, like you say, it's a whole new life, and it's going to be different. But you're aware, you're awake, you're present, you're more authentic. You know, you're a better version. You're more living your life without alcohol than with it.
Makes you braver.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Yeah.
No, seriously. Yeah. Look at how far you've come.
And I think none of us thought, I'm going to give up alcohol forever, did we? I mean, it's...
I don't think anybody thinks
yeah.
that.
So I don't think anyone should also be thinking, I'm going to give up alcohol forever. I mean, I never did Dry January because I was like, what's the point of doing that? You know, but I... Even when I stopped, it was like, I'm going to stop for a few months and just reset and see what happens. But yeah, I would say to people, just try it. After a few months, just make sure you write things down, because you'll forget how things were. And, you know, you'll be amazed at the things. I was reading today my list of the things which had improved when I stopped drinking. And there's so many, and you forget about them. But... It's great to have a record of it and remind yourself.
Have you got
yourself.
That list?
Yeah.
Have you got it?
Got it.
Would
I've
you mind sharing some of the
I've
things on there?
Okay.
I think that would be so, so helpful.
Okay. Let me have a look at my...
The other thing I'm thinking, Dr. Helen, is like, you know, we are going to have some brave souls who've done Dry January and they've decided to carry on, because we kept kind of subtly saying throughout our... January episode. If you want to carry on to 100 days. So I'd love to hear your list, but then I'd also love to kind of medically know, like, what has happened to someone's body in the month that they were doing Dry January. Like, go on, let's get to your, okay. So this is your personal list, first of all.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I had like the good and the bad, the good things which happened were, I mean, things like, I felt less stressed straight away. So, and I was really surprised by that. I'd go to meetings in the morning and I'd feel less anxious. And I went to a restaurant and I enjoyed the food instead of constantly trying to get another drink. And that was what I was doing. I was trying to get the waiter's attention all the time. And I appreciated the food more when I started going to restaurants, little things like that. I went on a train journey and everything seemed brighter. And I was looking out of the window. I mean, it is that sort of, you know, pink unicorns dancing around. I was hearing about people's mad nights out and not getting FOMO and just feeling just happy that I wasn't actually there.
JOMO, the joy of missing out.
I was literally talking to someone at work about that the other day, about how I love being in bed on a Friday night at 10:30.
Tucked
up.
Best.
It's one of my favourite things. Again, I would have been, especially with the weather that's been a bit crap, hasn't it, the last few weeks. Not for you, Dr. Helen, over in the fabulous...
I know. Well, it's gone very cold here. It's gone down to 19 degrees today.
Oh, God. No. So sorry for you. But yeah, I don't miss it.
Another one which was interesting, which I'd forgotten about, was that I was listening to people talking about a night out, and they were talking about someone, and the way they were talking about someone whose like nose was red and he'd like been really embarrassing and he'd done all this. And I was just thinking, oh, thank God that's not me anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I've got pages and pages of it. And I had a few negatives, which was feeling like I might be boring on a night out, but in brackets I put, but I am boring when I'm pissed.
You're one of the least boring people that we've met, and I'm so glad that you joined Over the Influence, and I'm so glad that you listened to me mum Celia, who said, oh, Sharon's doing a podcast about sobriety, try that, which has led you to this point, which is brilliant. Before we wrap up our conversation, I just want to come back to something that basically is just at the heart of what we do, the heart of Over the Influence, and it's so important to our community. It's that connection. Just tell us about some of the connections that you've made and how that has helped you in terms of feeling proud rather than shame when it comes to your sobriety.
The forums posts are great. So I'm always doing like a little forum post, and I get on Zooms when I can, but also I host Zooms now sometimes. So I I'm like a stand-in Zoom host. I don't have a regular Zoom, but the Zooms are so good every single time, and they're different people, but they're all really interesting people. And at first I used to like make some notes when I was hosting the Zoom for things that I would say if the conversation ran out, but now I just go on it because the conversation never runs out and everyone's really interesting and you hear about people's stories. Sometimes you're talking about alcohol, sometimes you're talking about all sorts of things. So I feel like really that's been an amazing thing to do because I feel like I'm giving back a little bit. It reminds me of how hard it was to stop drinking and why I stopped drinking. And I feel like if things that I say can help people, that's really cool as well. So the doing the Zooms has been really, really nice and really helpful to me.
Look, I think I think there's a few people listening to this right now going, I can't believe she hasn't said my name yet.
I know.
You have got some OTI besties.
I have got some OTI besties, yeah. I'm not going to say who's my favourite.
I can't do that, none of that.
Because we know favorites. That, yeah, he'll be texting me saying, am I your favourite? No, but I mean, I flew over. I did fly over for Snowdon when we did the Snowdon weekend. And that was a funny moment because I was literally flying over to the UK for an OTI walk.
Crazy.
And I was, that was weird. I got there, met people that I'd spoken to on Zoom, spoken to on the internet, and like, yeah, had instant sort of besties. It was brilliant. It was just so good. It was so comfortable, so relaxed. And we had a whole weekend in Snowdon. And this year I've been back, we had the pizza. I've been back, every time I'm back to the UK, I'll probably catch up with a couple of OTI members who have become my really, really good friends. And there's one person that I speak to every day, and we've supported each other when we have been. I mean, there was one moment last year when I was actually, after 9 years, I was actually close to having a drink, and he kind of supported me through that, and I didn't. And you know, so there's people there to reach out to, but there's people that have become like really good friends in real life. Yeah, and I'm booked on Ben Nevis this year.
You know what? I said after last year, I said, I am never doing that bloody mountain again. And I meant it. And here we are. It's happening again. And you're doing it, Helen. It's such a beast.
But I came back.
It's horrible.
I came back at Christmas, and we went for a walk. There was about 10 of us, I think. In Lancashire, and the weather was absolutely horrible. So that is my common theme with all of the Over the Influence walks.
Yeah,
I've been on.
Yeah, if you book on any OTI event, there's a disclaimer at the bottom that says views are not guaranteed. However, you will have a laugh and you will have some absolutely brilliant company. Oh, Helen, I think we could talk for hours. It's been brilliant. I've so enjoyed listening to your story. And I love the fact that throughout this episode, Ben just keeps going, it's Dr. Helen. It's Dr. Helen. He loves the fact that it's Dr. Helen.
Yeah, I've got my mate Dr. Helen. It's awesome. My mate Dr. Helen, who's nearly a decade alcohol free. Like, it's just so cool. Sorry if I've, there's been a couple of times where I've had to mute myself because the baby has been kicking off. I'll try and leave the baby. I'm not bringing him to Ben Nevis, Helen, so he can catch
maybe
up.
Maybe not. No, maybe not. Although he'll get a lot of love. We'll all be fighting over looking after lovely Leo. In fact, bring him. Because if I don't have to go up that flipping mountain again, I'll sit with him in the hostel. It's fine by me.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I love that you're a doctor. I love that you are so open about, you know, the fact that you felt this sense of shame around not drinking, but a kind of a sober shame. I think it's a really good point to make. And it's a good point to make because, you know, you don't, you know, now you are confident and you are out there and you are telling people about how proud you are of your sobriety. It's a complete change around. And I think it's just really important that we get these messages out there. You know, that it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter how successful you are. Alcohol can get you. You know, it's an addictive substance. It's aggressively marketed to us at every turn. It's completely societally acceptable to the point where there used to be bars in hospitals where consultants would get their beer delivered to them. You know, but it's which is just nuts, isn't it? It's just nuts. But I we're great friends, Helen, because we're great friends. But I do like the fact that you are Dr. Helen. Yes, it is cool.
I know, I haven't given you like a proper medical lecture yet, have I? Either.
You know what? I honestly think that would be, if you could do a post in the forum, because there are new people who've joined us. I think this is a great time. People who kind of got through dry January, now into February and beyond. Like, it's a great time to remind people actually the physical impact. Like, yes, all the mental health stuff and all the lovely things that you said on your list. But I think it's a really good time to remind people, you know, by removing alcohol in January, this is what's happened to your body. Your liver is starting to repair yourself, et cetera. If you could do a post like that, I'd love to read it.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Because I'm really, I mean, I have been like, you know, researching it a bit more lately. And you know, I'm quite into, a lot of people into the microbiome, aren't they, at the moment? And it's like, oh my God, you know, alcohol puts basically a lining of this toxic substance from the top of your lips to the bottom of your intestine and totally... And it kind of like binds to the lining and it causes cancer and it affects your good bacteria. And it's like, wow, we don't talk about that. No one's talking about it.
It's a whole other episode, Dr. Helen. It really is. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us on the podcast. Thank you for sharing your story. And thank you for giving us, you know, a chance when you were already nailing sobriety. You were however many years in, but you came along and made some new mates in the process. So, Dr. Helen from the Middle East, thank you for joining us on Over the Influence.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been an honour.